They produce food and fiber and fuel, obviously, but they also provide much needed public benefits that are ecosystem service type benefits. So when we have crops that are grown with proper conservation systems, maybe cover crops, field buffers, we're producing cleaner water when it flows off the land than otherwise might have occurred. We improve the soil quality and capture greenhouse gas emissions. We sequester carbon into the soil. So we're an enormous solution set for climate change challenges around the country. When we think about endangered species and where these plants and animals reside, many of them reside on America's public lands. Who are the caretakers of public lands? It's farmers, ranchers, and foresters. So we've been having a conversation about not so much the past, but really the future, and talking about how as the world population increases, as the demands increase on the land, we've got to find a way to meet these needs in a sustainable way. And that got us into this idea of landowners, land managers being compensated for a much wider range of goods and services than they have been in the past.
What's the Pathways Project? That sounds like a big piece of this.
It is. This project began 3 years ago with a series of dialogues with several hundred thought leaders from the ag, conservation, forestry communities around the country. And they quickly coalesced around the vision that by the year 2050, land could be managed to meet these major societal needs. And in doing so, create fresh economic opportunities for the land managers themselves. That was the easy part. The hard part came when we said, well, how are we going to deliver on that vision? So we spent the last 3 years working with several hundred of these thought leaders from the ag, forestry, and conservation community and government agency and business partners, thinking about what has to change in order to get there. And when we started to look at the challenges that we're going to face, one of the biggest ones being the population is going to go from 7 billion people in the world to 9.5 billion. When we have the realization that our fossil fuel resources are probably at a finite level and we're going to have to find ways to produce more cleaner energy off the land. When we looked at the potential for food and fiber production systems expanding into natural ecosystems to meet that demand for more food and feed to satisfy the growing world population. These all became what we called mega challenges. And we came to the conclusion that relying on the government to bring forward program after program after program to solve these problems and looking to Washington or looking to Helena or looking to a local county government for all the answers was not realistic. That era is gone. We've had 5 or 6 decades worth of public expectation that the government would fix all these things. Well, the government can help. The government can bring some resources to bear, but they're not going to be the solution. So our Pathways Report has a chapter on ways to kind of reboot America's private public sector research program around land management so that we can focus on outcomes more than just a bushel of corn or a side of beef. What we're really talking about are managing the land in ways where we're harnessing resources from not just the government agencies, but from NGO partners, from landowners themselves. We're talking about a future where we're going to have markets in place that pay producers for these extra values that they bring forward.
Who pays?
The consumer pays.
Ah.
At a scale, though, that is shared across all of society so that it's a fraction of what it would cost if the costs were borne just by the government. So if you can provide a small incentive in the value of the food or the fiber or the energy commodity, that creates that incentive for the farmer, the forester or land manager, to not just cut down a tree and ship it to market, but to make sure that they are maintaining a sustainable forestry operation that is also managed for wildlife habitat, for clean water, for endangered species protection, for biodiversity.
Do you think the average consumer cares about these things? Somebody goes to Kroger or Safeway or whatever their market of choice is. Do they just want a cheap, decent apple?
I think the public is not homogeneous. There's not just one public. And I think if you look at stores like Whole Foods across the country, you've got producers that are producing for a market that is willing to pay a little extra. In that case, it's probably an organic or a lower input. So what we're trying to do is scale this up. If we're unhappy about the way government is performing, if we're unhappy about paying more taxes to deliver these outcomes, you've got to be creative. So what we're thinking long and hard about are some of these market incentives that can spread costs much wider and create an additional incentive that will allow producers to continue to stay in business and maintain economically viable operations that produce these wider range of goods and services. So we're here in the Clark Fork watershed for the next 3 days with a group of about 50 of these thought leaders from ag, forestry, and conservation organizations and agencies across the country. And we're here to take a look at what's been happening over the last 20 years. And this is an example of what we call an area of hopeful progress, where local leaders had a whole series of complicated, high-profile challenges, whether it's water quality challenges in the Clark Fork as a result of the mining waste that have flowed downriver for scores of years, soil health qualities, whether it's wildlife issues, endangered species issues, forest health issues. All of these challenges have manifested themselves in this part of the country.
And do you think people outside of our immediate area are taking note?
They very much are taking note. When we put our Pathways report together, we've had a very difficult time finding a resource base where these types of projects have been researched, documented. We found the Clark Fork, and we found about a dozen others around the country. And the leaders that we're working with at the national level, and they include some international leaders, said they are doing groundbreaking work. They're pioneers. We need to go take a firsthand look at what's different. So that's why we're here for the next 3 days. We have 50 leaders in from across the country, former presidents of national farm organizations, forestry organizations, conservation organizations, government leaders, wildlife experts. It's a very diverse collection. And we're going to be meeting with leaders from the Clark Fork Coalition, the Blackfoot Challenge, the Watershed Restoration Coalition. They're going to tell us how they went about moving from an old way, which was oftentimes characterized by conflict and challenges and managing for single objectives, to a model where they, not that they don't have problems and bad days, obviously they do, but where there's a healthy respect for each of the players that comes to the table, where there's a willingness to listen about the critical need not just to manage for water, but also to manage for an economically viable operation. And we're going to take a look at projects that they've put on the ground and have been tracking for a decade or more. And our hope is that we can leave with lessons learned. And our plan then is to capture these lessons and share them with other innovative leaders all across the country that are trying to do similar work.
Last question, just briefly. In the end, do the ConAgras and Monsantos of the world run the game, control the agenda?
I think at the end of the day, the people that control the agenda are individual landowners who have to wake up every day and maintain an economically viable operation. There are all kinds of production systems in the world. Some are more what perhaps you would consider to be commercial or industrial models, where we're producing very intensely in a landscape. We need those production systems to feed 9.5 billion people, but we don't need them everywhere. We also need smaller scale, diverse farming and ranching and forestry operations that are a different type of agriculture and forestry. So we talk with the industrial stakeholders like those you mentioned. We talk also to the smaller scale family operations. We talk and include in the Solutions from the Land dialogue those that are sourcing into an organic market or a lower input market or maybe selling into a farmer's market, a consumer-supported agricultural market. There's room for all of these systems. There is no silver bullet. And if we really do care about the environment, if we're concerned about biodiversity, if we're concerned about climate change, we can't dismiss the solution sets that modern-day commercial agriculture brings to the table. Technological advances, biogenetic advances, like genetically modified crops.
Huh, that's a four-letter word to a lot of people.
It sure is. But what we are urging people to think about is, if we didn't have those tools, how would we be using the resource base? How much more land would we be turning over each year to produce crops? How much more encroachment into natural ecosystems would there be occurring? We're not saying that that's the model for every farm, ranch, and forest in the world. But in many places, it's an appropriate system that can produce environmental benefits, food security benefits, national security benefits, climate change benefits. And if you don't think holistically about all of the challenges that 9.5 billion people are going to bring to society, you can maybe miss that point.
I've been speaking with Ernie Shea, Project Coordinator of Solutions from the Land Dialogue. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Ed.